Blog Talk Radio.
Health care, and now we're getting screwed.
screwed.
I get screwed.
And that's why they're upset about it.
That's right. And
we negotiated
the longshoremen.
Mm-hmm.
The longshoremen's union dropped out of the AFL-CIO
because
of this. And other unions are falling right and left out of this because they will not give in to because.
Let's see what.
Let me just complete this article, and then we'll go back to the article.
About it.
NBC Nightly News as well as CBS Evening News and This Morning both skipped the inconvenient rift between traditional liberal allies. ABC ignored it on World News and Nightline, briefly covering it on GMA. The Hill's Kevin Bogardis detailed a growing fight. During floor debate on the resolution, Joseph Negro, a president of the Sheet Metal Air, Rail, and Transportation Union, underlined Obamacare dire consequence for labor if a fix isn't forthcoming. He says, you are an ACA bill.
You allow an ACA bill to go through like this. I guarantee you, by your next convention 4 years from now, you won't meet a quarter of this room. We won't be here, Negro said.
We are
going to take it. We're not going to take it anymore. We are going to fight for our workers. Every one of our members is important to us, said Negro, to growing applause in the hall.
AFL-CIO President
Richard Trumker offered a similar attack, giving a speech in which he highlighted the mistakes of Obamacare. All three networks ignored this development, too. Apparently, the White House has attempted to dissuade the union from issuing its resolution.
A labor official told the Associated Press that White House officials had been calling labor leaders for days to urge them not to voice their concerns on the forms of a resolution. The official who wasn't authorized to discuss the conversations publicly and requested anonymity said, many union leaders insisted that they wanted to highlight their concerns.
Considering that the three networks enjoy covering conflict between various factions within the conservative movement, they owe it to their viewers to highlight this liberal rift.
So let's go to the audio. Big labor demanding changes be made in Obama health care. At a convention in Los Angeles, the AFL-CIO outlined flaws the group says that will drive the cost of union-sponsored health plans so high workers and employers will both be forced to abandon them. But the union, one of the president's biggest supporters, said it still backed the law's overall goal of reducing costs for all Americans. Yeah, well, kiss his ass, Mr. Trumka. But here's the speech at the convention.
And big labor is demanding changes be made to President Obama's health care law. At its convention in Los Angeles, the AFL-CIO outlined flaws, the group says, will drive the cost of union-sponsored health plans so high workers and employers will both be forced to abandon them. But the union, one of the president's biggest supporters, said it still backs the law's overall goal of reducing costs for all Americans.
Guys, I can't stand how they do this. You see how they edited that thing right out?
It wasn't Trump's fault.
No. It's what the news does.
Yeah.
Now this is the only mention of this thing too,
mm-hmm.
And it happens to be on Newsbusters, which is a combating liberal media bias.
Mm-hmm.
It's a right wing blog. No mention of this was on any left wing blog.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's not even mentioned on the AFL-CIO blog. Now you explain that to me. I don't understand a lot of the stuff going on here, folks. But, this came out, and, it's just unbelievable. There should be an impassioned speech by Trumka, but it's not even mentioned on the AFL-CIO blog, right? know, this is the sick thing about this whole thing, you know. I mean, even the unions won't even promote their own statement.
Well, you don't know that it's not there. You're not looking for it.
Well, yes, I did look for it, Lila. I looked for it today. I couldn't even find it. All right? You know, it's like...
Go to the top.
I did one. I was at
the
top,
Lila. Go to
the
top.
Where's the top?
Right there. Go to issues.
No, that's not in issues. Nothing like that. There's nothing there. It's just Trump smiling like a moo-moo. No. It's not that. Look, rebuilding America's dream. Okay, it has nothing to do with that. Okay, it's always over here. And they didn't even mention it, which is really disturbing. I mean, that even their own blog doesn't talk about it. So what is the problem? I mean, are they so sold out? You know, I mean, I just don't understand. I'm trying to be, you know, in solidarity here, but my God, when the only information that comes out on the entire internet...
You didn't go through everything, Leo, so you don't know...
Lila, I went back for the next 5 years, okay, to find some kind of statement, and there was none.
Last week, there was a speech on there.
There was not a speech by Trump, though.
I'm pretty sure there was. It was too long.
You know, I know you're a die-in-our-world unionite, and that's fine. But, you know, what makes me angry is that even on all of this, you know, there's no mention of it. It wasn't even on their blog.
Keep going.
You know, I mean, all it is rah-rah-rah-rah-rah.
You don't know. You haven't played them.
I went through this entire blog today to find it.
But you haven't played them all.
I wasn't going to play all the...
So you don't know what?
Lila.
I'm
sorry,
played
but
on there.
You
make statements that
look,
you can't
I'm,
back up.
I'm backing
sorry.
Everything up.
I'm sorry you don't.
All right, well, I don't give a goddamn because the way it is the way it is, okay? I mean, these people don't even support their own people. I mean, this is ridiculous.
See, video highlights from the... Did you play that?
No.
Well, then...
What are you talking about?
You just went right by it.
See video highlights. This is 20 days ago. What are you talking about? What?
You just went by it. It said video highlights from the convention. You have to go look for it.
Yeah. AFL-CIO convention condemns mass incarceration of colored people. It's just, I went through this entire AFL-CIO blog. Now, you would think they would feature that as a permanent statement on the blog, but they didn't. Movements of all workers is key to winning shared prosperity. I mean, that's the big thing that they had on there, all right, by Trump. They didn't have anything on this debate. That's why
it wasn't a debate. It was a
This was an issue, you know. I mean, a critical issue that wasn't brought up, but even on their own blog. So what's happening here is that, you know.
Well, I'm concerned that the longshoremen left.
Well, not only longshoremen, there were a lot of others that left, okay, and are leaving in droves because. There is no longer a continuity here. They're losing everything that they bargained for over the years through Obamacare.
Yeah, well, when you gave,
and through their
when
support
you bargained,
of Obama.
Just be quiet. When you gave up increased wages and took good health care and good faith, well, they better come up with better wages then.
And they can't. They're not.
So,
you know,
so their membership is screwed.
Their membership is totally screwed, and that's what's happening here. And, of course, you're not going to hear a damn thing about it on their blog, okay? You know, I'm sorry to say this, folks, but this is what's happening here. You know, there's nothing there, you know? Rebuilding the American dream, that's all there is on it with Trump. I mean, he was a patsy on this thing, and that's why, this is what happened, folks. You know, this is what happened, and you're not going to get any better. All right, let's go to this. AFL-CIO convention closes with Obamacare critique and calls for bipartisan political action. Okay? All right. Now, this just came up here. Let's see what this is about. Because I was so disgusted by this and why, you know, what's been happening. It's unbelievable. Now, this is from The Nation. AFL-CIO convention closes with Obamacare critique and call for bipartisan political action. The nation's largest... I get so many pop-ups on this damn thing, you think you were... Okay. The nation's largest labor federation closed its quadrennial convention Wednesday by challenging President Obama on the Affordable Care Act, pledging international solidarity and bipartisan politics, and promising to make good on its weak themes of opening up and doubling down. I mean, these guys are supporting their own destruction. An hour before gaveling the convention to a close, AFL-CIO delegates passed a resolution expressing support for aims and accomplishments in the Affordable Care Act, which is Obamacare, and deep concerns over its implementation. The resolution urges that the act should be administered in a manner that preserves the high-quality health coverage multi-employer plans have provided to union families for decades, and it is not possible. We demand the ACA be amended to by Congress.
First of all, thank you, Keith, for that very kind introduction.
My love.
Well, here is the whole thing of Trump's speech. It's on there.
Well, let me finish this, and we'll play that, okay? An hour before gaveling the convention, the close of AFL-CIO delegate passed a resolution expressing support for aims and accomplishments of affordable health care concerns and implementation. The resolution urges that the act should be administered in a manner that preserves the high-quality health coverage multi-employer plans have provided to the unions over the decades. And it is not possible. We demand the ACA be amended by Congress. It calls for more penalties for employers who cut hours to shrink coverage, curtailing some new taxes and fees applied to union health plans, and extension of tax credits to them. The debate on the resolution stood out for the number of union presidents who personally took the floor to press their case, and more so for the pointed comments they directed at the White House. Noting Obama's pledge to fix what was broken in health care and build on what was working, International Brotherhood of Electric Workers President Ed Hill told the Hall the ACA, as it currently stands, is not meeting his promise. If an employer wanted to transfer money from a nonprofit successful health care plan to a for-profit insurance company, said Hill, we'd be on the streets. Paraphrasing Vice President Biden's famous whispered comments on the ACA's passage, that's Affordable Health Care Act, passage, Laborers International Union of North America President Trevor O'Sullivan warned, it's going to be a freaking deal if our members lose our health insurance. While urging support for the resolution, O'Sullivan voiced his concern that it does not go far enough because if the Affordable Health Care Act is not fixed and it destroys the health and welfare funds that we have as fought for and stood for and stand for, this, I believe, it needs to be repealed. Sheet Metal Air, Rail, and Transportation Union President Joe Negro warned that the ACA, if not fixed, would decimate union membership. I guarantee you, I guarantee you, by next convention, 4 years from now, you won't see a quarter of this room. You won't be here. The ACA resolution had been repeatedly revised and debated in private meetings of union leaders this week, including one held at 7:15 p.m. Wednesday. It ultimately passed with little public disagreement, save a speech by Catherine Donahue, the delegate from California Nurses Association, who opposed the resolution on the ground that the AFL-CIO's focus should be on winning a single-payer system instead. Yeah, let's get a single-payer system and destroy everything the unions ever stood for. The Hill's Kevin Bogardis reported Wednesday that the Obama administration has placed calls to union leaders asking them not to pass the resolution. In convention addresses this week, both White House advisor Valerie Jarrett, you know, the great Obama, you know, Momo, and Secretary of Labor Tom Perez, all right, emphasized the administration's commitment to working through ACA's administration issues with union leaders. Well, Sean McGavy, who leads the AFL-CIO's Building and Construction Trades Division, described the resolution to delegates as one that arms our leader with our team of leaders in such talks. And interviewed shortly before the vote, American Federation of State Council and Municipal Employees asked me, President Lee Saunders, whose union is the AFL-CIO's largest, told The Nation, which is this magazine which has the article, we're going to sit down with the president and have some constructive discussion with him and try to impress on him the importance of, you know, making some changes to it and have this as a work in progress. Asked about Luna's stance raising repeal as a possibility, Saunders said simply, that's not anywhere in the resolution. Soon after the voice vote passed the ACA resolution, delegates passed a series of others, including one-on-one bipartisan political action. That resolution, submitted by the BCTD, not by one of the AFL-CIO's pre-convention committees, stated that the labor movement is charged with using all of its resources to advance its members' interest in respect to job creation and the availability of sustainable wage benefits and working conditions, and committed the AFL-CIO to a pragmatic, a bipartisan approach to electoral efforts that focuses primarily on candidates' positions and focus and issues of direct importance to workers. That contrasts, at least in the emphasis, with resolutions like the one passed by delegates on Monday, stating that labor movement engagement on issues like voting rights, mass incarceration, student debt, paid sick days, and the Employment Non-Discrimination Act shows that the labor movement commitment to issues important to our members and our allies.
The bipartisan political action. The bipartisan political action resolution was introduced by International Association of Firefighters President Harold Scheitberger, who said his union has already implemented the simple principle by saying, if you're with us, we're with you. No delegates rose to speak in support or opposition to the resolution, which passed easily on a voice vote. One delegate could be heard yelling no. The AFL-CIO referred a request for comment about the resolution to the BCTD. A spokesperson did not even immediately respond to a Wednesday evening inquiry regarding what would qualify as issues of direct importance to workers. In an email to The Nation, AFSCME's Saunders said his union supported the BCT's resolution because it makes it clear that elected officials can no longer hide behind party affiliation, and our support is going to be based on their record of support for working families.
Sarita Gupta, who helms the Labor Committee organizing and advocacy group Jobs with Justice, America Rights for at Work, said this week's convention showed how recent years' alt-labor efforts by workers excluded from labor law had earned serious attention and engaged within the AFL-CIO. You have to build a bit of track record in order to traditional labor to really say, oh, there's something happening here and how do we relate to it? Well, Gupta told The Nation she cited the incredible work that domestic workers did to make themselves visible and to make their organizing visible and to win some real victories, which she credited with instigating a greater appreciation for informal economy and workers in the informal economy among AFL-CIO leadership.
John Borsos, the Secretary, Treasurer, and National Union of Healthcare Workers, told The Nation that unions certainly should do a better job of building community alliances, and that many alternative organizations like workers' centers were coming in and filling a vacuum that the labor movement really hasn't addressed. But he argued that much of the convention conversation on labor-community partnership seemed to be not talking about a trade union movement or a labor movement as much as it's talking about political lobbying operations. It may be, in these days and times, perceived as old-fashioned, said Borsos, but the power of the union comes from the worksite. Asked about such concerns, Gupta said that while not all AFL-CI unions even have the tools and the know-how to engage communities, some of the unions and most serious about organizing in the workplace were the same ones aggressively seeking stronger partnerships beyond it. Given the legal obstacles and intense employer opposition facing workers who organize, she said, there are lots of unions saying we can't take this fight on by ourselves, so we need to actually be working with community in a different way. She added that the growing number of workers who just aren't in traditional workplaces, like taxi drivers or domestic workers, require a broader community approach to the organizing. National Guest Worker Alliance Director Saket Soni, who attended the convention with a pair of striking subcontracted cleaning workers, said he saw a marked contrast between this year's event and the previous one in 2009. That Pittsburgh convening, he said, was really about preserving the labor movement as it was.
In contrast, said Soni, I think this convention is about building a worker movement that's equal to the challenge of the economy. So, essentially, we read you the entire article, and, you know, this is the only article that I've read in the last week, okay, regarding this, okay, and this is from The Nation magazine. But Lila can play this video.
Well, I don't know
where the hell that came from.
This one is economist Joseph Stiglitz talks about shared prosperity at the 2013 AFL-CIO convention.
That's cool.
And that might be interesting because they talk about how workers' output is increased by 40%, but pay is barely increased.
I would rather read the article on the true unemployment at 36%.
That's
okay.
A little scary.
And, I bet these articles, I post these articles on my page. If you happen to be out there and you happen to be listening, if you're on Facebook and you want to send a Facebook friend request of some sort, please do. I'll accept you, especially if you mention union or anything else like that. But I post so many articles that I get all the time. I get so many. I got thousands of friends that send me stuff, you know, every day. And I try to, incredible things and articles from all over the country and all kinds of different alternative media and mainstream media as well. But what I'm trying to say is, you know, these articles, you can only get news today from the alternative media. You cannot get it from the mainstream. The mainstream will not give you anything.
Trump.
Hang on a second. I'm just trying to get this. It's not too far away here. I'm so upset. Go ahead, sorry. You had something from Trump? Okay, fine.
First of all, thank you, Keith, for that very kind introduction, and thank you more for what you do every day for working people. Thanks all of you for being
Trump,
here. Talking
on,
brothers and sisters, I'd like for you to look around this great hall right now. Look at the power represented in this hall. And so the real question for this week is, what are we going to do with it? Do we intend to build an American future, a future for the 99%, a future for our children and grandchildren that doesn't just seek to restore the best of our past, but seeks to outdo all that we've done before? First, let's be very clear about where we are today. You know, we used to say that what made America special was if you worked hard and you did your part, you had a real, real good shot at reaching the middle class, and that the working class was the middle class, and that you might work in a coal mine or a hotel laundry, but your children could do anything if they worked hard enough. Now, this is the story of my life. My grandfathers went into the mine hungry. My father helped build our union and fought for our country. And together, with help from our union, my parents and I were able to earn the money that sent me to college and to law school. Now, I talk to a lot of people as I go around the country, as many of you in this hall do. And it's clear that something's changed. The truth is, who your parents are, no, really, what your parents have matters more than it once did. And the people I talk to don't say, I'm in the middle class so much anymore. They say, I work if I can find a job. They say, middle class? That's what my parents were. So what makes somebody middle class in America? Well, a job that pays a living wage with health care and retirement security, a safe job, a job that leads somewhere. It's that simple. But the working class is not the middle class anymore. Here's the truth that we live every day. We work harder. We work longer hours. We create more goods, more services, more of everything, and yet most of us earn less. Less than we earned 5 years ago. Less than we earned 15 years ago. And barely more than we earned 35 years ago. And our biggest employers, Walmart and McDonald's, well, their whole business model is about keeping the people who work for them poor. And Wall Street cheers them on. But this is a rich country. So where's all the money going? Now think back over the last 15 years. Think of all the work you did, all your members did, all the work your friends and your neighbors and your family did.
These are all examples.
And now understand that all of the wage increases over all those years, not some, not the majority, not the vast majority, but all went to the top 10%. Incomes of the rest of us, 90% of America, went down. And those who did the best were those at the top already, the top 1%. Now, this is an America that is upside down. Since 2009, the pay of America's corporate CEOs has gone up nearly 40%. Now, imagine for a second what our country would be like if the ordinary people's income had increased like those CEOs. Think about that. Almost no one would live in poverty. You see, it's time, my friends, to turn America right side up. And to turn America right side up, we need a real working class movement. And if that's going to happen, we, our institutions, have to do some things differently. We must begin here and now today the great work of reawakening a movement of working people. All working people, not just the people in this hall, not just the people that we represent today, but everybody who works in this country. Everyone who believes that people who work deserve to make enough to live and enjoy the good things in life. Now, we can come together at this convention and shout all day long about how corporations and the rich and Wall Street did this to us, about the Koch brothers and their war on working people, about nasty little conspiracies like the American Legislative Exchange Council, about the Supreme Court and its war on democracy. And it's true. There are powerful forces in America today who want our country to be run by and for the rich. Forces that have systematically stripped workers of power and pushed wages and benefits down. But greed and privilege and hate have always been with us. The question is, what are we going to do about it? You see, we are 13 million strong, and we are today, as we have been since the time of Abraham Lincoln, the biggest, the strongest, the best organized force for economic justice in America. But we're a small part of the 150 million Americans who work for a living. See, we can't win economic justice only for ourselves or for union movements. It was just not possible right now. All working people will either rise together or we will keep falling together. And what is true for America is doubly true around the world. A global economy means all workers in all countries are bound together. Now think about this. We've always had the same hopes and the same dreams. And now we have the same employers, the same vastly powerful global corporations, the same borderless financial firms, the same union-busting lawyers and management consultants, the same right-wing political operatives. And they'll never stop pitting us against each other until we stop letting that happen. Shared prosperity around this beautiful world is truly within our grasp, but only if we link arms. And we have to start here at home, because the AFL-CIO and the unions that make up this federation, well, we exist to make real the promise of America for all working people. If instead workers create more and earn less, our children go homeless while housing sits empty, our bridges fall down while bridge builders sit idle, then we must ask ourselves, how must we change? How must we reignite our movement? Not so we can have bigger unions, but so we can together make all working people's lives better. You see, brothers and sisters, this convention, not me, not the Executive Council, this convention is the ultimate governing body of the AFL-CIO. And it is in our power, here in this hall, to move forward and to build a movement strong enough to raise up the values that built this country. This is America. It's time we value work, not wealth, not greed, but we value work and the people who do that work in this country.
This particular speech goes on, and you can get it on the AFL-CIO blog. I encourage you to listen to the rest of it. I'm sure it's very good, but it goes on. for
quite a few more minutes.
But I thought I'd give you a little taste of it. I probably toward the end he talks about Obamacare, and I'm sorry that we didn't have that piece.
If that's even a speech, the one that, you know, maybe he came out and did another one. But, you know, the problem that we face is that the unions are so up the rear end of Democrats, okay? They always have been. And the Democrats are so, you know, disloyal to the unions, all right?
Yeah, they seem to have forgotten.
It's like all we need to do is just have our own Labor Party. And if you have a Labor Party, you can bust the ass of Democrats like nobody's business.
And Republicans.
All right? You could kick ass like nobody's business.
The problem is you can't get a third party in this country.
You can if you develop it through the unions.
Well, Ralph Nader tried.
But Ralph Nader was a nut. Okay.
No, he wasn't.
Yes, he was. Did you see his? We supported Ralph. Okay. In 2000. Did you see his platform? It was insane. Okay. It was totally insane. Do you remember that? It was crazy. Okay. I mean, he chose Winona LaDuke as a running mate.
I love her.
God. All right. Well, an American Indian woman as his running mate. I mean, he was making a statement. The fact that he got 5% of the American vote was amazing, okay? But it was change. He was making a statement, all right? But it wasn't a political reality, okay? You know? And his platform. You won't know this, but in 2000, Lila and I supported the Nader campaign because it was so outrageous, you know, and so real. We needed a change at that point. But if you saw his campaign, or his platform, it was totally ridiculous. It couldn't pass in a million years, right? We understand that. But the thing is that, you know, today you can have a Labor Party and you can have a campaign and you can fund it and you can push it and you take that labor union power away from the Democrats and they become neutered. You put that Labor Party against the Republicans and they become crippled. And the Labor Party would win, okay? Because all they need is a strong candidate and somebody and a strong message, okay? And they have it, which is jobs, okay? Economy,
The Republicans have the absolute wrong attitude.
But they got the money and the strength behind them, and the Democrats are nothing but
erectile, dysfunctional lunatics.
You know.
Just let somebody else talk.
Well, if you let me finish, Lila, because this is the problem that we have here.
I understand that, Leo, you take up everything.
I mean, you got morons like Nancy Pelosi and Dianne Feinstein and Richard Blumenthal and all of these Zionist crazy. Corporate horrors, okay, who sell out within a second to any other country and have nothing and absolutely no loyalty to the unions, all right, no loyalty to labor, all right. You get rid of these kind of leadership. You get rid of these people. All you got to do is get rid, you know, abandon the Democratic Party and start the Labor Party. No. Nah, forget it. If people have the attitude that you have, okay.
How do you know what attitude I have?
Well, your attitude is like, Democrats are Kennedy, wonderful. I didn't say that, Leo.
You didn't give me a chance to talk.
Well, you're not defending a labor union.
I can't talk because you take up all the space.
Well, you give someone else a chance.
Stop talking and let someone else voice it.
Explain yourself then. defended the union position defending Obamacare, you know, offending Obama.
Will you stop talking so someone else can have a chance?
Okay, go ahead. Please defend yourself.
Thank you. First of all, you don't even know how I feel because you talk all the time. You don't give someone else a chance.
Yeah, right, Lila. Democratic bullshit. Okay, keep going. Okay, come on. Be a Democrat.
Yeah, making fun of someone else makes it very difficult.
I hate Democrats, Lila.
I'm not speaking about Democrats.
Right,
I'm talking about the union. I don't disagree with you on forming another party. It's very difficult to create any change the way this party system is here in this country.
But if the unions continue to support these lame-ass Democrats...
Would you stop talking?
Yeah, okay.
And I think that they could look toward what some of the European unions have done.
Yes.
And they're much stronger in their government.
Look what the British have done with the full Labour Party, you know?
But I don't look to Britain as a
Labour Party. That's what you need.
I think you're on the right track. How that's done, I'm not sure because they've tried to make a movement to have a Labour Party.
You know, the Green Party, the Greens of Green.
That has nothing to do with what you're saying.
Or like the Workers' Party or this or that.
Well,
just start a Labour Party.
In Connecticut, they have the Working People's Party.
Yeah, it's such a joke. Let me finish. Okay, go ahead. It's a joke. The
Working People's Party, which I think was a good idea to start it, but what happens is they seem to... support Democratic candidates.
Yeah, that's all they
and know. Sometimes, once in a while, they'll put up their
and
own.
And they're all minorities.
They put up their own. Well, they put up their own candidates, but they don't get. But they don't get the. They don't get the right publicity,
and they
don't have enough strength.
And they don't. They have no strength, and you know, and they have no.
I think it was a good idea, though.
Yeah,
they're on the right track.
I mean, the Workers' Party. It sounds like a communist group. You know what I mean?
It's not, but
you can't change American opinions that way. You know, a Labour Party makes sense for crying out loud. You know, labor, everybody is a laborer. I think today people would understand that, okay? Labor against management, that is the way it is. That's what unions are about. If unions are smart, then they will, you know, create their own power base. You know, instead of, you know, sucking up to Democrats who are nothing more than corporatists.
You can't share the power with the elite because they're unwilling to share it.
And they are Democrats and they are Republicans, and that's the same thing.
Unfortunately, okay? That's the truth.
We found that out over hundreds of years of the two-party system doesn't work. All right?
You need to open up to more parties.
I've got something I want to mention here. Guess who's exempt from Obamacare? Barack Obama and his family, Congress and their families.
Who wrote this?
Justice Department, extremely pissed off right-wingers. That's who wrote it. Okay. And Justice Department and their families, Supreme Court and their families, federal judges and their families, and 1,200 corporations and unions. Okay. Now, the unions are exempt from Obamacare until next year, believe it or not. They got an extra leap year into the program. But what's happening is every single union now is saying, we hate Obamacare because it's going to destroy our unions, it's going to destroy our health care programs, and it's going to destroy us. And they just read it. Okay? There'll be less than, a quarter, three quarters of the people at that convention won't be there anymore because they won't have jobs. Okay. They will not have jobs. They will not be there, he said. Okay? And that was the head of one of the unions.
Oh, the union leaders.
Yes.
You're talking about. I thought you were talking
not
about
the union leaders, the people that were at the convention. Okay? Frightening. Now let's get off this union stuff for a while because it's so aggravating to me to see what's happening to it, and it's so obvious what's happening to it. Is that they're being led down by the nose by Democrats, okay? And the Democratic Party has done nothing but destroy unions over the years.
I thought we were changing the subject.
We are. But I'm just trying to say why we're getting off the subject. All right. From the pages of Milton William Cooper, which is Bill Cooper's 1991 book, Behold a Pale Horse, predicted school shootings by drugged individuals in order to disarm the public. Yes, he predicted this in 1991.
Bill Cooper
is a very, very famous guy. He's on YouTube. You can go to Bill Cooper and find it. See all kinds of he was a CIA guy to turn in, you know, that came on and exposed the CIA and all of this stuff that was happening. Okay, then in what was in futuristic, saying what their plan was to destroy the whole country, basically. The government encouraged the manufacture and importation of military firearms for the criminals to use. This is intended to foster a feeling of insecurity which would lead the American people to voluntarily disarm themselves by passing laws against firearms. Using drugs and hypnosis on mental patients in a process called Orion, the CIA inculcated the desire in these people to open fire on schoolyards and thus inflame the anti-gun lobby. This plan is well underway and so far is working perfectly. The middle class is begging the government to do away with the Second Amendment. All right? Now, he wrote this in 1991, okay? And we're just hanging on by a thread. Okay?
Well, where did he write that? He has a book?
Yeah, he had a book, and the guy is famous.
Behold, and that's the name of the book,
Behold
the
Pale Horse. Yeah, very, very famous book. And he a very famous speaker. He was assassinated, actually, in a while back, back in the late 90s. Unexpected death.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a very interesting thing. This is by I think we'll have her as a guest on next week. But the Armageddon looting machine, looming mass destruction from derivatives. I want to read that. But right before I do that, I just want to say this. Obama demands gun controls and approves gun shipments to Al-Qaeda.
On the same day.
On the same day as the D.C. shooting. This big bastard. Okay, of bastards. Right. Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. But you know, I just can't. I hate this man with all my heart. You know, I think he.
I
voted
him personally.
For him.
I hate what he.
No, I hate him because he's what he stands for, Lila. He's what he is, right? And I voted for him, and he is disgusting. Is everything disgusting that this country stands, you know, this country is, right? You know, warmongering SOB, right? But I want to go to this. This is from a friend of our program, which is Ellen Brown, and I hope to have her on. She was a great author who wrote The Web of Death, and she's an attorney. And she wrote this this was published in
very smart woman.
Huffington Post.
There's a lot of research.
This is a frightening article, and I want you to brace yourself for it because, and this will be probably the last article we read tonight, but Armageddon looting machine.
The looming mass destruction from
derivatives. Right. And this is, you think labor problems have a problem, wait till this thing happens, wait till this hits the fan. Increased regulation and low interest rates are driving lending from the regulated commercial banking system into the unregulated shadow banking system. The shadow banks, although free of government regulation, are propped up by a hidden government guarantee in the form of safe harbor status under the 2005 Bankruptcy Reform Act, pushed through by Wall Street. The result is to create perverse incentives for the financial system to self-destruct. 5 years after the financial collapse precipitated by the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy on September 15, 2008, the risk of another full-blown financial panic is still looming large, despite the Dodd-Frank legislation designed to contain it. As noted in a recent Reuters article, the risk has just
banks are pulling back their balance sheets from the fringes of the credit markets, with more and more risk being driven to unregulated lenders that comprise the $60 trillion shadow banking sector. Increased regulation and low interest rates have made lending to homeowners and small business less attractive than before 2008. The easy subprime scams of yesteryear are no more. The void is being filled by the shadow banking system. Shadow banking comes in many forms, but the big money today is in repos and derivatives. The notional or hypothetical value of the derivatives market has been estimated to be as high as 1.2 quadrillion, or 20 times the GDP of all the countries world combined.
Imagine that. Yeah.
No.
According, that's how much they've gambled on these things.
According to Hervé Hannunen, Deputy General Manager of the Bank for International Settlements, investment banks as well as commercial banks may conduct much of their business in the shadow banking system. Although most are not generally classed as SBS institutions themselves, at least one financial regulatory expert has said that regulated banking organizations are the largest shadow banks. The hidden government guarantee that props up the shadow banking system. According to Dutch economist Enrico Parati, banks are able to fund their loans much more cheaply than any other industry because they offer liquidity on demand. The promise that the depositor can get his money out at any time is made credible by government-backed deposit insurance and access to central bank funding. But what guarantee underwrites the shadow banks? Why would financial institutions feel confident lending cheaply in the shadow market when it is not protected by deposit insurance or government bailouts? Parati says that liquidity on demand is guaranteed in the SBS through another, lesser-known form of government guarantee, safe harbor status in bankruptcy. Repos and derivatives, the stock and trade of shadow banks, have super priority over all claims, Parati writes.
Security pledging grants access to cheap funding thanks to the steady expansion in the EU and U.S. of safe harbor status, also called bankruptcy privileges. This ensures lenders secured on financial collateral immediately access to their pledged securities. Safe harbor status grants the privilege of being excluded from mandatory stay and basically all other restrictions. Safe harbor lenders, which at present include repos and derivative margins, can immediately repossess and resell pledged collateral. This gives repos and derivatives extraordinary super priority over all other claims, including tax and wage claims, deposits, real security credit and insurance claims. Critically, it ensures immediacy and liquidity for their holders. Unfortunately, it does not by undermining orderly liquidation.
Unfortunately, it does so by undermining orderly liquidation.
Yeah.
When orderly liquidation is undermined, there is a rush to get the collateral, which can actually propel the debtor into bankruptcy. The amendment to the Bankruptcy Reform Act of 2005 that created this David status for repos and derivatives was pushed through by the banking lobby with few questions asked. In a December 2011 article titled Plan B, How to Loot the Nations and Their Banks Legally, documentary film producer David Malone wrote, "This amendment, which was touted as necessary to reduce systemic risk and financial bankruptcies, allowed a whole range of far riskier assets to be used. The size of the repo market hardly increased, and riskier assets were gladly accepted as collateral because traders saw that if the person they had lent to went down, they could get their money back before anyone else, and no one could stop them."
Burning down the barn to get the insurance. Safe harbor status creates the sort of perverse incentives that make derivatives financial weapons of mass destruction. As Warren Buffett famously branded them, it is the equivalent of burning down the barn to collect the insurance, says Malone. All other creditors, bondholders, risk losing some of their money in a bankruptcy. So they have a reason to want to avoid bankruptcy of a trading partner. Not so the repo and derivative partners. They would now be best served by looting the company perfectly legally as soon as trouble seemed likely. In fact, the repo and derivative traders could push a bank that owed them money over into bankruptcy when it most suited them as creditors. When, for example, they might be in need of a bit of cash themselves to meet a few pressing creditors of their own. The collapse of Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers, and IAG were all directly because repo and derivative partners of their institutions suddenly stopped trading and looted them instead. The global credit collapse was triggered, it seems, not by wild subprime lending, but by a rush to grab collateral by players with congressionally approved safe harbor status for their repos and derivatives. Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers were strictly investment banks, but now we have giant depository banks gambling in derivatives as well. And with the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act that separated depository and investment banking, they are allowed to commingle their deposits and investments. The risk to the depositor was made glaringly obvious when the MF Global went bankrupt in October 2008, right? And they lost $30 billion and never recovered. When MF Global went down, it did so because its repo derivative and hypothecation partners essentially foreclosed on it. And when they did, so they then looted the company. And because of the commingling of clients' money in the hypothecarian deals, the looters also seized client money as well. J.P. Morgan allegedly has MF Global money, while other people's lawyers can only argue about it. MF Global was followed by Cyprus Bailing, the confiscation of depositors' funds to recapitalize the country's failed banks. This was followed by the coordinated appearance of bail-in templates worldwide, mandated by the Financial Stability Board, the global banking regulators in Switzerland. The auto-destruct trip wire on the banking system. There's only a couple paragraphs left, and I want to finish this article because it's so good. Bail-in policies are being necessitated by the fact that governments are balking at further bank bailouts in the U.S. The Dodd-Frank Act, Section 716, now bans taxpayer bailouts of most speculative derivative activities. That means that the next time we have a Lehman-style event, the banking system could simply collapse into a black hole of derivative looting, Malone writes. The bankruptcy laws allow a mechanism for banks to disembowel each other. The strongest lend to the weakest and loot them with the moment of crisis approaches. The plan allows the biggest banks, those who happen to be burdened with massive holdings of dodgy euro area bonds, to leap out of the bond crisis and instead profit from the bankruptcy that might otherwise have killed them. All that is required is to know the importance of the bankruptcy law and do as much repo, hypothecation, and derivative trading with the weaker banks as you can. I think this means that some of the biggest banks themselves have already constructed and greatly enlarged a now truly massive tripwire auto-destruct on the banking system. The weaker banks may be the victims, but it is the people who will wind up holding the bag, Malone observes. For the last 4 years, who has been putting money into the banks and who has become a massive bondholder in all the banks? We have. First via our national bank and now via the Fed, ECB, and the various taxpayer-funded bailout funds. We are the bondholders who would be shafted if the Plan B looting. We would be the people waiting in line for the money the banks would have already made off with. The banks have created a financial Armageddon looting machine. Their Plan B is a mechanism to loot not just the more vulnerable, vulnerable banks and weaker nations, but those nations themselves. And the looting will not take months, not even days. It could happen
hours.
In hours, if not
yeah.
minutes. Crisis and opportunity building, a better mousetrap. There is no way to regulate away this sort of risk. If both the conventional banking system and the shadow banking system are being maintained by government guarantees, then we the people are bearing the risk. We should be directing where the credit goes and collecting the interest. Banking and the credit and the creation of money as credit need be made public utilities owned by the public and having a mandate to serve the public. The public banks do not engage in derivatives. Today, virtually the entire circulating money supply and consists of privately created bank credit, money created on the books of banks in the form of loans. If this private credit system implodes, we will be without a money supply. One option would be to return to the system of government-issued money that was devised by the American colonists, revised by Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War, and used by other countries at various times and places around the world. Another option would be a system of publicly owned state banks on the model of the Bank of North Dakota, leveraging the capital of the state bank backed by the revenues of the into public bank credit of the use of the local economy. Change happens historically in times of crisis, and we may be there again.
Mm.
And that was by Ellen Brown and written and published.
We've got to have our own banks. I mean, she said that all along.
We've talked to Ellen for a number of years. After we've had her on a number of programs, and a very, very bright woman.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And
she's absolutely right. She's been saying
the same
thing.
And if you can get this book by her, The Web of Debt, Public Bank Solution, President, Bank Bearing, Public Banking Institute. She's also the president of the Public Banking Institute, right? Okay. But she wrote The Web of Debt and the Bank Solution and many, many, many articles. So we're done tonight, and we want to thank everybody for joining us.
Yes, we do.
And
there's a lot to think about out there, folks.
Oh, God, yeah. We talked about it. We really struggled tonight to try to give you some news. And please join me tomorrow night when I get a little lighter.
Yeah, maybe Leo won't be so angry.